A boy stands at a crossroads with a letter in his hand, a letter that will save his soul according to everything he's been taught, a letter that will betray the only real friend he's ever had. He tears it up. All right then, I'll go to hell. This moment captures the heart of what makes us human, the terrible, beautiful capacity to choose our own values over inherited ones, to trust experience over doctrine, to risk everything for what we know is right. Mark Twain's 1884 masterpiece doesn't just tell a story, it holds up a mirror to America's soul and asks, what does freedom actually mean when society itself is the prison? Huckleberry Finn's troubles begin with comfort. The widow Douglas means well, dressing him in stiff clothes that make him sweat and feel all cramped up, teaching him to pray over perfectly good food, and forbidding him to smoke while she takes snuff herself. It's the small hypocrisies that sting most. Miss Watson tells him about the good place called heaven while planning to sell her slave Jim down to New Orleans for $800. When Huck's violent, alcoholic father, Pap, reappears, a man whose face is fishbelly white and whose eyes shine like he was behind vines, the contrast sharpens. Pap kidnaps Huck to an isolated cabin, ranting drunkenly about an educated black man from Ohio who can vote. "I'll never vote again," he declares, as if his own degradation somehow grants him moral authority. Between the suffocating propriety of the widow and the dangerous chaos of Pap, Huck finds no authentic freedom, only different forms of captivity. Huck's escape becomes a masterclass in theatrical deception. He doesn't just run away, he stages his own murder with meticulous detail. He kills a wild pig and smears its blood on an axe, smashes the cabin door from outside, creates false footprints, drags a sack of rocks to the river to suggest a weighted body, and scatters cornmeal to create a misleading trail. From his hiding spot, he watches the town perform grief. Judge Thatcher discussing the tragedy, Tom Sawyer theorizing about riverboat pirates, even Pap putting on drunken sorrow. This elaborate death represents Huck's first rebirth, a calculated shedding of identity that frees him from society's claims. On Jackson's Island, he sets up camp with the satisfaction of someone who has successfully orchestrated his own liberation. But true freedom, he'll discover, requires more than escaping civilization. It demands choosing what you'll live for. When Huck discovers Jim hiding on the island, Miss Watson's slave fleeing because he overheard her planning to sell him despite her promises, their fates intertwine. Jim's practical wisdom complements Huck's resourcefulness. He predicts weather from bird signs, suggests moving supplies to a hidden cavern, and compassionately shields Huck from seeing a dead body in a floating house, later revealed to be Pap. Their conversations reveal Jim's independent thinking. When Huck explains Solomon's judgment about splitting a baby, Jim rejects the conventional interpretation. What use is half a child? His logic is unassailable, demonstrating that wisdom doesn't require education or privilege. As they build their raft, a floating sanctuary where conventional rules don't apply, their partnership becomes something revolutionary, a genuine friendship between a white boy and a black man in a society built on denying such equality was possible. The Mississippi becomes more than setting. It's America's moral landscape flowing beneath the raft. Huck and Jim drift under stars, discussing whether they was made or just happened, existing in moments of natural equality. They plan to reach Cairo, Illinois, where the Ohio River joins the Mississippi, then travel north to freedom. But when fog causes them to miss Cairo and drift deeper south into slave territory, it's not just navigation they've lost, it's destiny itself. The river remains morally neutral, carrying them toward both liberation and danger. On shore, they encounter civilization's true face, the Grangerford-Shepherdson feud, where aristocratic families attend church with rifles hidden beneath their Sunday best, listening to sermons about brotherly love while maintaining a generations-long blood feud no one remembers starting. When young Buck Grangerford dies in the mud during a gunfight sparked by an elopement, Huck wishes he hadn't ever come ashore that night to see such things. The contrast becomes stark. On the raft, humanity. On land, hypocrisy and violence, dressed in respectability's finest clothes. The novel's moral center arrives in stillness. Huck, alone with paper and pen, writing to Miss Watson to reveal Jim's location. For a moment, he feels clean of sin, believing he's restored his standing with God and society. Then memories flood. Jim's kindness, their conversations, the way Jim protected him like a father, Jim calling him his best friend. Huck tears up the letter. "All right then, I'll go to hell." This choice, made by an uneducated boy following his heart against everything he's been taught, represents moral courage at its purest. The profound irony cuts deep. Society condemns as sinful what is actually the most moral action possible. When Jim later reveals that the dead man in the floating house was Pap, Huck gains legal freedom from his father's claims. But he's already claimed something more valuable, moral independence. His final declaration to light out for the territory before Aunt Sally can civilize him suggests that true freedom remains incompatible with society's demands for conformity. What does it mean that Huck must keep running? That Jim gains legal freedom through Miss Watson's will, but remains trapped in a society denying his humanity? That the river, symbol of liberation, flows through landscapes of bondage? Twain offers no comfortable resolution because America itself has none. Through feuding aristocrats, fraudulent royalty, and well-meaning reformers, the novel reveals how society's rules often restrict rather than enhance human dignity. The relationship between Huck and Jim stands as counterpoint, proof that genuine connection can transcend inherited prejudice, that conscience can triumph over convention, that choosing to go to hell for another person's freedom might be the most divine act possible. We still stand at Huck's crossroads, letter in hand, choosing between comfortable lies and difficult truths. The question isn't whether we'll face this choice, it's whether we'll have the courage to tear up the letter when we do. Because freedom isn't found in the territory or on the river or in any geographical place. It lives in that terrible, beautiful moment when you choose your own values over inherited ones, when you trust what you know is right over what you've been taught is proper. That's the territory ahead, not a place, but a choice, and it's always just one torn letter away.